There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and over at the Supernatural News Desk, knee-deep in news, knee-deep, it's Tim Dennis. Knee-deep, Tim.
Knee-deep.
Knee-deep. You've got a lot of news this week. Well, not tons of it, but we've got enough. A lot of weird stuff, too, man. I'm looking at some of the titles of these articles. I don't even know. Where do you want to start today? Where are we going to go first?
I'm going to start with a man, Dave. And I'm going to, first of all, forgive me, everybody. I am dealing with the worst allergies in the world here in Minnesota this week. So I may sound a little rough. Just there you go. We're going to start with a man from the future who passed his lie detector test and says he has alien friends. Now, Dave, can I preface this with, first of all, if you believe your own delusion, chances are you'll pass anything.
Wow.
You will.
Wow.
That's
why can't it just be that he really is a time traveler, Tim?
Well, you take that position. I'm going to take the position that if you believe your own delusion, you will pass anything. That we'll just leave it at that. James Oliver's story was doubted, but paranormal experts say they were blown away when results showed he was not lying. A man who claims he's from the year 6491. Good to know we're still around at 6491. But has got stuck in 2018 when his time machine broke down, allegedly passed the lie detector test. James Oliver's story was doubted, but paranormal experts say they were blown away when they put it to the test because results showed he was not lying. Oliver claims he lives more than centuries in the future, but was sent back in time. Following his bizarre claims, paranormal YouTube site Apex TV carried out an experiment where Oliver managed to pass every question. "Your years are different to mine," he says. I almost feel like I should be doing this in the caveman voice.
Unfrozen caveman lawyer voice.
"Your years are different to mine," he says in an anonymous video, which blurs out his face, adding, "Where I'm from, the years are longer." Oh, God, that would be terrible, wouldn't it? "My planet is further away from the sun than yours is, so it takes longer to get around." However, he adds that they have gifted mathematicians who work to calculate their years from those from other civilizations. Interestingly, the self-claimed future man has a Birmingham accent with a U.S. twang. Oh, dear God.
That's because, just like Doctor Who, it is definitely his time travel device that is manipulating it so that he can be understood wherever he goes, Tim.
Oh, is that what it is, Dave? Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure.
It's a universal translation chip.
Uh-huh.
So his time travel has obviously taught him and embedded in him kind of this program that allows him to speak, probably in his own native time travelian accent.
Time travelian?
Yeah, time traveling. Look it up. It's a thing. Uh-huh. And most likely, he just sounds like an actual time traveling alien. But because of how amazingly updated and adapted this guy is, he's able to communicate with the entire world. Look, it's working. It's working, Tim. Uh-huh. He sounds like he's from Birmingham and has a twang of American.
U.S. twang, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm, sure. Oliver, it's
universal.
Oliver even went on to add that there have been more species of flora and fauna that have been discovered, and that there are fights brewing between humans and aliens. His story resembles the film plot to Back to the Future storyline, because he couldn't come up with anything more original.
Well, I don't remember us being at war with aliens in Back to the Future.
Oh, but wait. Where Marty McFly gets stuck in the 50s after he's run out of plutonium to power his machine, which is an old DeLorean car. Oliver went on to add during the test that global warming is going to get worse. He also said there is a United Nations-style system of planetary leaders to ensure peace. He didn't get
the Federation of Planets. We know that. That's what Star Trek has been telling us for 50-some years, Tim.
Yeah, he didn't get
I'm not surprised by this.
Very original with the story, evidently. Not only that, Oliver's shocking claims include befriending aliens as well. He said, I have personal relationships with a few of them, because we can't track them down to back his claims. He also said, I have friends I'd consider aliens. Oh, sure, because we can't claim it, Dave. I have friends that are aliens, too, Dave. I just can't, you know, I can't.
He's got friends from alien places.
He says, they're a nice lot, they are. Don't be quick to judge, he said.
Well, Tim, how do you feel now? You're so quick to judge.
I feel just fine, Dave. He further added that his closest friends are from another galaxy. Oh, my God. This is... however, despite being asked who the future president of the U.S. is going to be, he denied giving an answer. Of course he did, Dave. Of course he did. There you go. There's that story. You know, some of my closest friends are aliens, too, Dave. You just don't judge me.
You are so cynical.
Yeah.
Cynical.
Some of my closest aliens friends are from other galaxies.
Now roll over. It's time for a probing.
Wow.
What?
I said some of my closest friends are from other galaxies too, Dave. You can't just throw that at me and say that I don't have friends from other galaxies. Some of my closest friends are from Uranus.
Not for mine.
Hmm.
Yeah. Where are we off to next?
Other news, Dave, it says here, ghost took picture of a sleeping British mom and left her terrified. Oh, I don't know why. That's not creepy at all. A British mom has been left terrified after a mystery photo of her sleeping appeared on her phone. Ooh-hoo.
That's creepy.
No, a little bit. Deborah Demetriou of Newcastle was left shaking after scrolling through her pictures on her phone. The full-time mom claims to have found a picture of herself in bed under the covers while she was sleeping. And actually, if you take a look at her picture, I can see why the ghost snapped one off, so to speak. This is terrified Deborah, who insists that she did not take the photo and there was no one else in the house at the time. Her eldest son, who had gone to work before the picture was taken, and her other son was with his dad, she claims. Even more mysterious was that her house remained locked and showed no signs of a break-in. She said, I know you shouldn't, but my phone had been under my pillow when I fell asleep. Okay, wait a minute. It was still there the next morning. I held down the picture to see the movement, and you can see both my arms are by my side, so it couldn't even have been a selfie. And my eyes are half open. If someone else had been in the room, I'm sure I would have noticed them. I wonder if she's on Ambien. I absolutely convinced nobody else was in the house. After claiming that other strange incidents had happened in the house, Deborah now believes the photo could have been the work of a ghost. A clairvoyant also told her the pictures from her son's last birthday contained ghosts of deceased family members. Paranormal investigator Sammy Rawlinson said, spirits do things to get our attention. If someone had passed in the last year, it could be them trying to get her attention, said the paranormal investigator. Deborah had not reported the incident to the police. And, of course, why would she? I'm just saying. There you go.
Well, yeah. I wonder, is there a trigger on, you have an iPhone, is there anything you can say to be like, take a picture, and your phone will just take a picture?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, I haven't tried it, but I'm sure there is. I'm sure Siri will do anything for you if you ask. I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, you know, I haven't tried some things with Siri, but, you know, if I get lonely enough, I'm sure I will.
I have a hard time believing that, Tim. I think you've probably tried everything with Siri.
Well, some things.
Yeah. All right. Where are we off to next?
Well, buried neck deep for exorcism, a woman dies crying for help. This is not one of those stories where it ends nicely. A 30-year-old woman died of panic and suffocation after she was buried neck deep in a 5-foot-deep pit in a yard for hours by a woman practicing witchcraft in Muslim-dominated, I believe this is a Mewat district of Haryana. I've never been to Haryana, Dave. Have you?
No, it doesn't sound like I want to go there either. This whole burying your neck deep just doesn't sound like a fun vacation plan.
Yeah, it's probably the least expensive Haryanian vacation plan. The victim cried for help for hours before a large crowd had gathered to see what the witch doctor claimed would be an act of exorcism in front of all. The deceased, Parmina, was touted to be under the influence of evil spirits. The victim's husband, Sakir, a native of village Bhutpur Udawar, was made to convince relatives that his wife needed treatment meant for people showing signs of paranormal activity. Sahida, the woman practicing witchcraft, is being questioned by the police. According to the victim's husband, his wife had been manifesting strange behavior for the last many days. Treatment by doctors, he claims, proved of no help, which is when villagers viewed her case fit to be treated by Sahida of another village, who they claim cures persons under the influence of evil spirits. On Tuesday, Sahida buried the victim neck deep in a pit in her yard. The victim kept screaming relentlessly, feeling suffocated under the earth. The husband claims he suggested that his wife be pulled out, but was driven away by Sahida and others with the logic that the spirits were trying to lure him to impede the treatment. Ugh. Well, that didn't go well, did it? Slowly, the cries of the victim, mothers of two kids, waned and finally stopped. She had died at that point. The victim was then pulled out without breath and her eyes shut. Sahida maintains the spirit had killed Paramina, a joint panchayat of both the villages was summoned to resolve the matter.
Wow. Yeah. There's got to be better ways to get healed. That's all I'm going to say.
I'm
being picky, maybe?
No. I think you're dead on in this one. I mean, I didn't mean to say dead on. I meant...
Wow.
No, I don't have the words, Dave.
All right, Tim, where are we off to next?
An actual Roswell crash site is going to have tours for the first time ever, Dave. For the first time ever, members of the public will be able to set foot on the spot where it is believed that a UFO crashed in the desert outside of Roswell. As part of the annual festivities celebrating the 1947 event, the current occupants of the ranch, once owned by Mac Brazel, have announced plans to provide tours of the location for that one weekend only. This is particularly remarkable because despite the huge influx of tourists to the city every July for events commemorating the Roswell crash, the ranch had always been closed to visitors. However, the family that now owns the ranch have finally decided to embrace the property's place in UFO lore by way of tours that are being trumpeted as the first of their kind in 71 years. If you're wondering what may have inspired the change of heart, well, we're guessing the $250 price tag for the VIP experience and a more modest $65 cost for a bus tour of the location might provide that answer. It's, you know, just a modest
cost. That's pretty cool. This is, I would love to actually get out to the site because you go to the town of Roswell and it's nowhere really close to where the craft supposedly went down. So to get out there and get this opportunity to actually see Mac Brazel's ranch and where this happened, that's great. I mean, I just came back from England where I got to visit the English version of Roswell. And I felt that, you know, there's no debris there. There's not a scorch burn mark or anything like that. But it's just amazing to be standing in that place in history. So I think it's a great idea. $250 seems a bit pricey, but, you know, I've been on expensive tours before. And sometimes it's just worth it to get a chance to get access to something that has not been available.
While some may balk at forking over that kind of money to visit an otherwise barren area of the New Mexico desert, it says here in the article, we're guessing that the historic nature of the site and the fact that such an opportunity has never been available before to make or will make the tours the hottest ticket in town at this year's event. Those who partake in the more expensive version of the tour will be able to enjoy a meal of authentic Mexican cuisine and participate in interactive activities at the crash site, perhaps even more intriguing for UFO history buffs. They will also be allowed inside the ranch house where Mac Brazel once lived, and presumably some pieces of the infamous crashed object were briefly housed back in 1947 at that location. The tour group will also have metal detectors available to rent for anyone who may wish to try their luck at trying to find a piece of flying saucer debris that may have somehow gone unnoticed in the sand for 7 decades.
Yeah, I think they've swept that area pretty close for many, many years. But good luck with that. That'd be cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I could swing 250, but I might take the bus ride by where we just drive by and blow the horn.
Sure. Blow the horn at aliens.
All right. Where are we off to next?
Well, we go to Italy, where some odd crop formations have been found. Dave, an Italian farmer. Oh, you got to love the Italian farmers. When you're there, your family, you know, out there in the in the Italian countryside where they're growing crops. Yeah. An Italian farmer woke up to a bewildering sight last week when he noticed that a series of strange formations, for lack of a better term, had appeared overnight in his wheat field. He said, "Mamma mia, look at it out there, Dave, out there in the wheat field."
Look at the out there?
Yeah.
You sound like Lawrence Welk.
It's country Italian, Dave.
Oh, okay.
They speak differently out there in the country. The proverbial crop circles located in the community of Romano di Lombardia. I don't know if you know this, Dave, but that's where Vince Lombardi was born. Yeah,
I'm going to challenge you on that.
No, it's true, Dave. You can't find his birth certificate anywhere. Are particularly odd because they do not seem to form any kind of picture or design. Instead, they appear to be simply scattershot patches of wheat that have been inexplicably pressed down to the ground with no discernible rhyme or reason. Now that, I will say, that is probably alien. I don't think aliens can make nice pressed little form patterns where they make sense. I think it's just like alien braille.
Did they all just get out and like pee on the grass and get back?
Yes, in their that's exactly ship,
so
what
they weren't
is.
Really trying to put down any kind of intricate patterns. It was just like, those last 200 coffees, woo, they're hitting me.
That's exactly what it is. It's too much alien espresso. The man who spotted the oddities, Giovanni Spinoza, told an Italian media outlet that nothing out of the ordinary stood out during the night, that the formations were Austin's, I'm about to sneeze, hold on. The Austin's, ostensibly formed in the field outside of his house. I don't know why ostensibly makes me want to sneeze, but it does. Pardon me. It was only when he and his wife began their morning that they realized something was amiss. We looked out the window and we saw the field in the state, he said, with these sort of drawings. The curious condition of the field immediately made Spinoza think of the infamous crop circle phenomenon, since a number of such formations had appeared in a nearby area of Italy a few years ago. As to what may have caused the damage to his field, the farmer did not offer a guess, but did muse that there's a quote here, Dave. I would tend to exclude that it was the wind. The wind, Dave.
What?
The wind. The wind.
It was the wind?
The wind.
She liked the wind.
In his soul or something, you know. He's Norwegian-Italian, Dave. While the media outlet initially reporting on the incident was dismissive of the potential paranormal connection to the case, Spinoza offered up one intriguing clue which may have been of interest to crop circle enthusiasts. According to him, when he observed the downed wheat up close, Spinoza saw that the ears are not broken, only folded. Also, they did a nice job of it, Dave. They did like a laundry job on the deal. Like a dry cleaning deal. Yeah, they just folded it. They didn't break it. The detail is rather striking, since such bending of crops is often cited by researchers as a distinguishing difference between genuine designs, which display the strange folding, from man-made creations, which generally do not. This puts a rather puzzling twist on the case, as it would seem to suggest that whatever forces form classic crop circles were also behind the work in Spinoza's field.
So Roswell's open and Spinoza's field is open, so you can go see where a UFO crashed or where aliens stopped to take a leak real quick in between flights to Mars.
Right, but keep in mind, it's a long ways from New Mexico to Italy.
Is it really? Is it really? Well, I mean, it's a flat Earth, Tim. Obviously, it's not that far. Because if I look at a map of the world, it's only like it's only like 12 inches. I can walk 12 inches in seconds, Tim.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Dear Dave, listen. We are not going to put up with this flat Earth crap anymore.
Flat Earth?
Flat
the
Earth.
The old flat Earth? Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah, the old flat Earth. I hate that.
You know,
okay, Tim, where are we off to next?
We got one story left. I was just going to tell you, you know, folks, not only have I been using TheraWorks Relief on my calves at night for neuropathy, but I've also been using it on my back. It's been working wonders. So go ahead and check it out there, like Dave said. We have one story left here, Dave, and it's kind of a chilling, disturbing story. But we're gonna leave you on Supernatural News with this. Grave-robbing witches, prostitutes, and drug addicts descend upon Miami's cemeteries. Desecration and grave-robbing have surged in Miami cemeteries recently thanks to prostitutes, junkies, and the dark magics of Palo Mayombe practitioners seeking human remains. Sounds like a party, Dave.
Okay. Not a party I want to attend, but no. Okay.
No alcohol there, I guess. Vandals desecrated dozens of graves in May alone in the three oldest cemeteries in Miami, stealing human skulls and other bones from their occupants, in most cases, either to use in witchcraft rituals or to sell to those seeking the supernatural energies of the dead. According to the Miami Herald, that is, cemetery caretakers said the sites had been subject not only to witchcraft-affiliated grave robbings and deposits of animal sacrifice, but also sleeping homeless people, addicts using the cemetery as a place to get high, and prostitutes turning quick tricks and shooting cemetery porn. That's a thing?
Cemetery porn, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I've heard. I haven't watched it much. I haven't seen it personally lately, but whatever.
Think I've ever partook.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Huh.
No.
There's a lot of witch...
I made you move from one house to another because we were too close to a cemetery. I don't think cemetery porn's in my future, my friend.
No. And
when I say I made you move, I didn't be like, hey, I'm not visiting you. I mean, we lived together at college.
Yeah.
And our place was across from a cemetery. And I said, to thee, I say a hearty nay. I didn't want to be the front line on the buffet table for the zombie apocalypse.
Oh, you were very skittish the entire time. Yeah.
And tell people, honestly, this zombie apocalypse thing is not new or a bit for the show.
No, no.
I've been talking about this since before college time.
You're very frightened by the zombie apocalypse.
I'm not frightened, Tim.
No, frightened is a good word. It's a very good
frightened.
Word.
I'm aware. I'm proactive in keeping myself unbitten. I like to think of it that way. Frightened sounds really sad.
No, no, it's not a sad term. It's just anybody who wants to move from what do you think they're all going to get up and come over for coffee? I mean, you know, they weren't doing anything.
I'm worried about it. Yeah, and so what do? We immediately move in right across the street from an old folks home. So we were, again, front line on the old folks zombie buffet.
What are they going to do? Come over and gum you to death?
Yeah, they might. You don't know.
Okay.
All right.
There's a lot of witchcraft going on, and I've been offered $1,000 for a skull, said Arthur Kennedy, caretaker of the historic Black Cemetery Lincoln Memorial Park, according to the Miami Herald. It's inhumane how they're attacking the dead and dismantling the graves. Our history is buried in these cemeteries, he went on to say. Confronting those looking to steal bones for use in voodoo or Palo Mayombe has proven dangerous, Kennedy said, and that he is also kept constantly busy cleaning the cemetery of the remains of sacrifices and offerings left by those seeking pacts with the dead. I got shot once, he said.
What?
A guy pulled a gun on me when I told him to get out, Kennedy told the Herald, showing a scar on his thigh. I might pick up 18 chickens in one day. I picked up a boar's head, a dead monkey, dead rabbits, apples, a birthday cake. We got some birthday cake is the one that doesn't quite fit there.
One of these things is not like the others.
We got some serious voodoo and hocus pocus out here. Hocus and pocus, Dave. Both of them. Yeah. Mm. Equally as disturbing to this place of mortal rest, according to Kennedy, are the other unsavory denizens who use the site for drug, sex, and an impromptu shelter. You think
are those relatives of yours, the unlikely denizens? You're Tim Dennison, they're the unlikely ones?
Yeah, we have a small clan there in Miami we don't associate with, so I'm sure they're the ones hanging out there. You'd think Evergreen was a homeless shelter. They're not zombies. They're just resting, Kennedy told the Herald. It's saturated with drug addicts getting high in the graveyard. People have sex right on top of the vault, he went on to say. Prostitutes need a quick trick. Cemetery porn. It's crazy. Don't know that that would be the most invigorating backdrop for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ronnie, I guess, well, when are you closer to heaven and earth than having sex?
God.
So, like, I'm just trying to, I'm rationalizing, Tim. I'm trying to find a link.
I see.
That makes sense to this whole thing.
And when have you ever been more cold than on top of a gravesite?
Wow. Well, or stiff. I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah. Ronnie Hurwitz, caretaker of Miami City Cemetery, said he, too, has had to deal with a surge in witchcraft-related vandalism, as well as heroin addicts who break into mausoleums to shoot up. He says a goat's leg, pig's head, little cups of espresso, and voodoo dolls. Which one of those doesn't fit for you? Hurwitz told the Herald, every Sunday, the grave of Lieutenant General N.I. Egorov of the Russian Imperial Army is covered with sweets, and only sweets. Hurwitz said of a recent addict incident, they broke the doors into a mausoleum and were shooting up and sleeping in there. I found 25 needles on the floor. As for the homeless, Hurwitz told the Herald that they, too, have left their mark, sleeping on sites, or on site on piles of plastic bags and using it as a laundromat, hanging wet clothes on headstones to dry. Weird. The different forms of witchcraft motivating the acts of cemetery vandalism can be identified by specific kinds of desecration committed. Those who follow Santeria, an animistic religion with roots in West Africa that evolved in the Caribbean, will often leave offerings to appease the orishas, or different gods or spirits representing different forces of nature. These offerings can consist of everything from innocuous fruits and sweets to the grisly sacrifice of animals, usually those common to farms. Santeros do not, however, incorporate human remains into their appeals or conjurings. That practice is a mark of Haitian voodoo and the Afro-Cuban religion of Palo Mayombe, sometimes called Santeria's evil twin. Santeria has nothing to do with human bones, but in Palo Mayombe and voodoo, they do work with human remains, said Mercedes Sandoval, professor emeritus at Miami-Dade College, according to the Herald. Palo Mayombe originated in a different part of Africa, in the Congo, and has its own priesthood and rules. They're looking for spiritual forces in the dead, and they believe in making a pact with the dead. They used to buy skulls from places where they sold things for medical students. From the outside, it may look like a lack of respect for the family of the dead, but they are doing it to show disrespect, she added. Palo Mayombe practitioners sometimes incorporate human remains into cauldrons called Ngangas, or prendas, that's what it is, which they...
Prendas?
Prendas, trying to get the pronunciation right, which they... Sorry, I'm about to sneeze here. Hold on. Okay. Which they consecrate into a particular spirit. The cauldrons are central to Palo Mayombe rituals, including pleas to the spirits for blessings and also for curses and hexes sometimes intended to kill their target. When you destroy cemeteries, you destroy the past, Mallory Fenn, Florida Public Archaeology Network's public archaeology coordinator, told the Herald. We want to assist in protection and maintenance and raise awareness so that people will value cemeteries as public museums.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, Tim, you said that was your last news story.
Well, it turns out I have one more.
You do. You've got one. And we listen, I've talked about being in the end times before, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Zombie apocalypse, your concern for the rise of AI and cybernet.
Oh,
but
yes.
We have to start watching for signs. We have to be aware of when the end may be near. And, Tim, there's been in the Bible, the stories of the locusts and the famines and the floods. This headline tells you that the end times may be closer than we've ever been before, Tim.
Well, I don't know if this is the main sign that all that's coming down, but...
Oh, really? Really?
Something's coming down.
Could you think of one thing that would be a bigger sign that the world is about to end than this, Tim. That's all I'm asking.
Well, kids, earmuffs. The world's turned into shit.
Literally.
Liquid poo has rained down on a woman and a son and sitting in a car. Yep. You heard
so
me.
All of you out there that complain about feeling like life is shitting on you, it isn't, because this woman and her son literally knows what it feels like to get shit on.
And it didn't happen in the good old U.S. of A. You would think it would happen to us first. Oh, no, no, no. It happened to our friends in the South, Dave, in good old Canada.
Oh, right down by the Texas border.
Right down by the Texas border. The Canadian woman claims the feces shower, believed to have come from a passing aircraft, left her with conjunctivitis in both eyes.
She's lucky that's all it left her with.
Yeah. Boy, I'll say. A woman in Kelowna, British Columbia. By the way, Kelowna was my favorite character on Good Times. I don't know if you know that or not.
That was Fiona.
Okay. Is haunted by an experience she had nearly a month ago when she was sprayed by liquid poo. I'm Mr. Heidi, the Christmas poo. And I've always wanted to do that.
Liquid poo. Mm-hmm. By Menon.
Oh, I love that cologne. Susan Allen said that on May 9th, she and her adult son were sitting in her car at a stoplight when the feces came pouring in through the sunroof. One of the reasons why you never want a sunroof on your car, by the way. Just open the side windows. You'll be fine. Or use the air conditioning. I'm a big fan of AC. I don't know if I've told you that before, Dave. Not the guy who drove OJ around, but yeah. While we were sitting there, our car was inundated with liquid poo falling from the sky, Alan told globalnews.ca. I had it on my face, down my shirt, my entire car, and the vehicle beside us. We were all covered in it.
No bueno. No mas, senor.
No. I love the way you speak Swedish, by the way. Alan said she and her son, Travis Sweet, he wasn't so sweet after this.
No.
Watched the excrement fall as a large passenger plane flew overhead. Bombs away!
Look at the hood of her car.
I am looking at it.
It's like 2 million birds just flew over simultaneously.
That's a big blanking bird. Oh my God, this, I can't read this quote. Hold on, I'll try. All right. I'm a professional. I'm a journalist. I can do this.
Since when?
Oh, last week.
Oh.
They actually knighted me at KNSI. They came up with a little sword and they tapped me on both shoulders and said, "You're a journalist now, son." And then I laughed so hard I nearly crapped myself. Yeah. The actual sensation of crap hitting their skin was something Travis will never forget. First, he said he felt a cold sensation hit the side of his face and shoulder. I got through it, Dave. Did you see that? I almost did it in a news-like voice, too. All right, here we go. I'm a journalist. I can do this. Then the smell hit my nose, he said. I almost vomited instantly. It was terrible.
Oh, God. It's the end of the world as we know it, Tim.
It pretty much is. Alan contacted Kelowna Airport for answers. They pretty much picked
up. I wish I could hear how that call went.
Pretty much like this. Hello, Kelowna Airport. You what? Yeah. You what? Yeah, well, we all get some shit thrown at us every once in a while. Deal with it.
Wow. Oh, gross.
Or it went, sorry, buddy. Eh, you know, you want a moose head? That's pretty much how it went. An administrator for Transport Canada told her the government department would investigate the possibility of frozen lavatory waste. If it was frozen, it would have killed them. Called blue ice. Oh, have you ever had the blue ice over there at the bar at the Mall of America?
I won't ever again, that's for sure.
Okay. Falling from an aircraft, according to the Globe and Mail newspaper, a spokesperson for the airport told Fox News that as of Monday, there is no connection to an aircraft as Transport Canada's investigation is still ongoing. Alan claims that as a result of the feces rain, which is the name of my new single.
Feces rain, feces rain.
Do you remember the kid that did the song Chocolate Rain?
No.
Oh, Dave, look it up.
No. You can't make me.
Do it.
No.
Do it.
No.
Do
no.
it.
No.
Do it.
No.
She now has conjunctivitis in both eyes. Feces rain. Some of us will feel the pain. Feces rains. A lot of you are listening now know that song, Chocolate Rain. You now will be singing it when you hear this story. I feel that they should compensate me for injuries, she said. What if it had let go in a big chunk? I let it go in a big chunk every morning about 9 a.m.
Oh, man, too much information.
What if it went through my son's head and killed him?
Well, how do we pay for what could have happened?
Yeah, exactly.
Should we just pay you for what did happen?
Right. That's more than enough.
Right.
What if it came through my head and killed me, Alan told CBC? This could be a much different circumstance than just poop in my eye, you know? You know, some people pay good money in Thailand for that lady.
Oh, gross.
Just saying.
I want to figure.
Transport Canada said aircraft with washroom facilities on board are equipped with an enclosed sewage holding tank that is designed to be emptied at special facilities at the airport. This time they missed that facility by about 10 miles.
Wow.
Just saying. It is possible that a valve malfunctioned and allowed some leakage of the tank's contents, the agency told the Globe and Mail by email. If this happens, the liquid seeping from valves freezes and adheres to the outside of the aircraft when the aircraft is flying at high altitudes. The department said it does not keep statistics of blue ice incidents. But the Kelowna International Airport told CTV News that it believes the liquid poo came from one of the three planes that were passing over at the area at the time. Alan said that her husband fixed her car's air conditioning so she doesn't have to drive with the sunroof open.
Gross. It's about time. It's about time he got off the pot and got to work, Tim.
Honey, I'm going to need you to slow down for a minute. I'm going to fix the AC.
Oh, my God.
She wants whoever was responsible to pay for her car to be professionally cleaned. I would just burn it.
I get where she's going with this whole thing. And at least that makes more sense than I could have been killed by poop. Yeah, you could have, but you didn't. Thank God all you got is a couple of cases of pink eye, but you should be compensated and well
for that. Would you ever drive this car again? She said she and her granddaughters have already scrubbed it down. I wouldn't drive it again. She said,
what choice do you have? If that's your car, you got to use your car, man.
Ask them for a new one.
Ask who? Nobody's taking ownership of this thing. I would agree. If it was, you found out it was an airline, you have them buy you a new car. But they don't know. Everybody's denying.
She says, we used bleach and peroxide and cleaned the poop that was there. Then they just covered it with perfume. So now it smells like Calvin Klein 1.
By Menon.
She said, she might be joking now, but Alan is still shaken by her stinky situation. All we want people to know is that it was quite devastating to be covered in poop, and I hope it never happens to anyone else. There you go.
Oh, yeah. See, Tim, that is one of the biggest signs of the apocalypse. You know the end is near. When sitting in your car with your sunroof open, poo just rains down on you, and nobody knows where it came from.
Well, that's why we're in radio and not rich enough to have a sunroof. There you go.
Yeah, well, I have a sunroof. Oh, no, I have a moonroof. I'm sorry. My car is kind of elegant, I have a moonroof.
That just means somebody can stick their ass through your car.
Oh, gross. Why do you got to take it there? Mm. All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we've got Parashare, your stories shared next right here on Beyond the Darkness.
Beyond the Darkness.
Hello, welcome back. This is Beyond the Darkness, your home for the best in paranormal talk radio every Saturday and Sunday. And remember, if you want even more paranormal talk radio, you can follow me over at midnightinthedesert.com. That's midnightinthedesert.com, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. And that is 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. Central. And if you can't listen live, you can also subscribe at midnightinthedesert.com. And for all of you that use the Darkness Radio app, it's available there. So you can live stream it or find ways to get to the archives. Make sure if you haven't done it recently that you go in and update your Darkness Radio app, because there's been a lot of cool changes and ads put on there. So make sure to check it out. And I don't mean advertisements. I mean, different add-ons for the service. So go check it out and update it. If you do not have it and you're a Droid user, go to your Google Play Store and just download the free Darkness Radio app and make it available to yourself. And then you have access to Tim and I and all of our different iterations, from True Crime Tuesday to Beyond the Darkness, our Darkhives, and with me on Midnight in the Desert. Go check it out right now at your Google Play Store and get the free app Darkness Radio. Let's get started, Tim, if you're good with that. We'll jump right into some Parashare stories.
Oh, yeah.
And people, you can email those stories into me at dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. This one's short and sweet, just like I like it. I have a couple of stories for you, it says. In November of 1979, one of my friends killed himself. The day of his funeral, I had a dream that shook me. He appeared to me and said that God was mad at him, but was going to cut him some slack and that he'd be in purgatory for a long time. I called a preacher I knew and told him my story. He said that, oddly enough, a woman had called before me with the same story about the same person. Neither of us are Catholic. And that comes from Carhu. Tim, Carhu.
Carhu.
Yeah, K-A-R-H-U. So thank you for that story, Carhu. Well, that's interesting, right? When it's a dream visitation. And, you know, there's so much concern about suicides and what happens to them.
Right.
Is it, you know, is there some kind of punishment for doing that? And, you know, to have the soul come back and tell you, hey, everything's going to be okay. I just have to deal with purgatory for a bit and then I'll be on my way.
Mm-hmm.
And to have two different people coming in talking about the same guy, that is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is.
Hey, Dave and Tim. Hey, that's us. I have so many different stories about the haunted homes I've lived in, but I will share with you a few stories with the house I grew up in. I grew up in a suburb of St. Louis, Missouri, in a typical ranch-style home. We moved in when I was 5 years old in 1975. It was my parents and my two older sisters, who are 6 and 7 years older than myself. I hadn't really noticed anything odd until I was in fourth grade. One morning, as I was getting dressed for school, I couldn't find my earmuffs and gloves. I'd laid them on my desk the night before, close to my coat. I looked around my room and had to call my mom to help me search. My mom, who had to leave for work, and said in a typical mom voice, "I guess you will just have to have cold ears today." I was getting angry and said out loud, "I'm going to be late for the bus. I need my earmuffs." I was facing the bedroom door with my back to my bed. I heard a gentle thumping noise and turned around. There were my earmuffs and gloves lying on my neatly made bed. As I picked them up, they were ice cold. I said out loud, "Thank you," and went off to school. Little things like this happened to me a lot, not only to myself, but to everyone in our family. Our basement was a finished basement and was where our family room was. The entire upstairs, excluding the bathrooms, were carpeted floors. I tell you this because when we would be downstairs, we could hear footsteps as if they were on a hardwood floor walking to the top of the steps, but never down them. If a family member were to walk around upstairs, we couldn't hear them. So we would always joke that it was one of the ghosts. We also believed that there were two spirits in our house, a male and a female, because of the heavy or light footsteps that we would hear. I had a hard time getting friends to sleep over more than once at our house. They would wake me up in the middle of the night in a panic, saying that they heard footsteps or heard their name being called. I would mumble, "It's okay, just the ghost. Go back to sleep." There were many phone calls to parents to come pick up their kid in the middle of the night. These same kids still talk to me about this on Facebook to this day. One story that sticks out in my mind involved my mom, one of my sisters, and myself. My dad had just come home from open-heart surgery and was asleep in my parents' room. My mom, my sister, and myself were in the basement watching TV. My other sister wasn't home at the time. We heard footsteps come to the top of the stairs and call my mom's name. She yelled, "What?" thinking it was my dad needing something. There wasn't an answer. Then my sister's name was called. She yelled, "What?" as well, still thinking it was my dad. Still no answer from upstairs. What kind of family is this? That this guy just had open heart surgery, instead of getting off their asses to go upstairs and see what he needs, they're just going to yell from the couch, Tim.
Yeah, really?
Get the hose. We need to beat these people. still no answer from upstairs. My name was then called as well. My mom was getting exasperated because we weren't getting an answer from our names being called. She told me to run up and see what he needed. As I got to the stairs, no one was standing there. I thought maybe he went to sit in the kitchen and proceeded to run up the stairs to the kitchen. He wasn't in the kitchen, so I thought maybe he went back to the bedroom. As I got to the bedroom, I found my dad sound asleep and snoring. I went back downstairs and told my mom that he was in bed sleeping. My mom just shrugged her shoulders and said, maybe the ghost needs something. My parents always told us not to be afraid of spirits because they just want to communicate with us. This kept us from being afraid of them while growing up. I thought it was normal to have this type of activity in one's house and never understood why my friends were scared. One night, I was in the kitchen getting a drink of water. We had a small lamp that hung on the kitchen wall. The only light hung about five to six inches from the wall, and the light wasn't very bright. I had my glass of water with my back leaning against the sink. As I gulped my water, I happened to be looking at the small light when I saw a shadow pass under the light. I didn't understand how a shadow could have been made from that small light, so I went to get my dad from his room. My dad came with me to the kitchen and inspected the light. We tried to recreate the shadow, but found that the only way to recreate it was to be right under the bulb, right against the wall. In all the time we've lived there, none of us were ever scared or hurt by spirits. I have many stories about this house and would love to share them at a different time. I also have several stories about other haunted homes I've lived in. I'm not sure if I attract spirits, if the spirits followed me from house to house, or if I just happen to get haunted homes wherever I live. Thank you for the chance to let me share just a few of my experiences. Until next time, that comes from Kelly. Yes, Kelly, as long as the stories don't involve your abuse of your father laying in bed and not helping him when he's just had open heart surgery, we'd love to hear those stories.
Right, yeah.
Oh, we just tease. We just tease. But it is funny, right? The guy just had open heart surgery. Hey, Tim! What? Dave? What? Go up and check on the old man. Yeah. What's wrong with you people?
You feed him every once in a while.
What's people?
Yeah.
Good God. Bigfoot. And the supernatural. That's how this story begins, Tim.
All right.
Hello, Tim and Dave. Love the show. I have two stories I'd like to share with you and your audience tonight. The first is my Bigfoot encounter when I was 12 years old. I was spending a few weeks at my cousin's ranch in the foothills of Central California. So my cousin Brian, his friend Matt, my name is Josh. I forgot to mention that. We had just finished watching some stand-up comedy on old VHS. As we were getting off the couch, we heard what sounded like a bear or something growl, very deep and intense. Now, there are animals on the ranch, just some cows and a few chickens. We knew it wasn't either of those. They quickly eliminated the deep growl, Tim, from the chickens and the cow. I'm not an outdoorsman, Tim. I'm not much of an animal guy in that sense. But I could pretty much tell you I don't know many cows that are outside going.
Even the rabid ones.
Rabid cows.
Well, you've heard of mad cow disease, Dave, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I thought that just means they're mad and they're like, hey, you kids, get off my lawn.
No. They got a little Jakob Creutzfeldt going on, you know.
Oh, their brains are spoiled?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they quickly discerned, Tim, that it wasn't the chickens or the cow that they heard growling. Now, just so you can picture it, the ranch is about 5 acres. It starts out flat. I'm sorry, just the idea of that. Could it have been the chickens? No, I don't think so. What about the cows?
Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. No, probably not the cows either. I'm sorry, it's just that makes me laugh.
Could it have
all
been
right,
the pigs?
So the growl, we all looked at each other thinking, did you hear that too? Then bang, bang, bang on the side of the house. At this point, the three of us are scared to death. We all hid behind the couch, each having a steak knife in our hands.
Oh, well, you're going to have dinner.
Well, why not, Tim? Yeah. If it's a mad cow, right? A growling cow, you might need to knock him down and make burger out of him.
I'll take the filet mignon if you don't mind.
Yeah. By the way, we're all around 10 or 11 years old. I look up at the window to see two big glowing red eyes. The other two see my shock and take a look and see the eyes too. At this point, we're all terrified. It's just a cow, Tim. Just the cow. Brian calls his grandmother next door and tells her what's going on. Of course, she doesn't really believe us, but she takes out her shotgun and fires two shots in the air to scare it off. This has got to be a very rural area, Tim.
Oh, yeah.
It's just out your door.
Well, unless you're...
I wonder if I could get away with that here in the Twin Cities.
Probably. I mean, if you're downtown, not downtown Minneapolis, but, you know, you're North Minneapolis, you can get away with it, sure.
Yeah, officer, I thought there was one of them big feet or a mad cow outside my window. I had to shoot to scare it off.
I don't think
she fired two shots in the air to scare it off, mostly just to make us feel better, is what I'm sure she thought after the warning shot. We heard nothing for the rest of the night. Fast forward to the next day, we wanted to investigate. We looked all around the house. The only noticeable thing we saw was a lot of the tall grass and weeds were pushed down in what seemed like a path. Now, I do need to say this. The window we saw the eyes appear in is a good 8 feet from the bottom of the window to the ground, so no random person or animal could have peeked their eyes in. We decided to follow the trail to the back of the ranch that led to the mountains. We walked about one-third of a mile back and found what looked like a genuine Bigfoot print. It's too bad this wasn't the late 90s before smartphones, or I would have definitely taken a picture. After that night, we never heard it again. Of course not. He was just coming over to borrow a cup of sugar, and you little bastards have Granny out there shooting her shotgun.
Well, yeah.
Next story. I was 10 and living in a farmhouse in AG County in California. Or is that Ag County? I don't know. The house we lived in was built in the early 50s and always gave me the creeps. Many nights I would wake up to go into the kitchen to get a drink, and all of the cabinets and drawers would be open with no one else awake in the house. I asked my parents about this, and they too told me that they've seen this and thought it was me. I would also see many shadow people in my room and the den. It would seem like many of them walking by my window all hours of the night. Now, we lived at the outpoint. Now, we lived at outpoint the country. Outpoint the county. The nearest house was a half mile away. It helps to use that spell check, folks. Just kind of reread your email out loud once for me before you hit send, just so that this doesn't happen. I know a lot of people and kids died in the fire. Where do we go to that fire? Okay, hold on. Let me go back in here. This is hard to read, Tim. There's a very tight, blocky lettering, and it's no breaking up of the sentences here. So now at this point, we lived in the country, I'll say. The nearest house was about a half mile, so there were no people walking around outside and nearly no car traffic. Also across the street, corner to us, was a memorial of a school that had burnt down shortly after the house was built. I know a lot of people and kids died in that fire. There's not a lot of info on the school, but some of the people there, but on some plaque, there's a whole list of names of the people. The last thing I ever experienced in the house before we moved was a full apparition. My dad and I were in the den watching a movie. My mom was in town working nights, and it was around 1 a.m. I got this cool sense to look toward the door and into the den, and which also led into the kitchen. And standing there was this woman who seemed to be looking for something or someone, but didn't seem to see us. She was dressed in what seemed to be very early 50s attire, large white dress and a white sun hat, and even an umbrella. My dad and I quickly looked at each other and then back at her. She stood for a moment, then turned and walked into the kitchen. My dad and I quickly got up and raced into the kitchen, but she was nowhere to be seen. We checked the entire house, but found nothing. We never saw her again. I hope you get a chance to read this, and I'm trying to get more info on another story for my aunt about the house that she lived in that was truly demonic. I'll do that and forward that one on to you in the future. Love you guys. And that comes from Shadow. Or is that? Yeah, I didn't see any other names, so that must be it. Shadow, Tim.
Ah.
Oh, no, Josh. That's right. It's part of the story. Josh sent that in. Okay. Thanks, Josh. I think I butchered most of that story, but I got it out either way, Tim.
There you go.
All right. Hi, Dave and Tim. I recently found your podcast, and thank God I did, because you've been my entertainment at work. You guys add the perfect amount of humor to your commentary. I love the Parishers and figured I'd share one of my own experiences. Last year, my grandmother ended up in the hospital and passed away on March 10th, 2017. I wasn't able to see her and say my last goodbye, as her and my grandfather lived in another state, which caused me to feel a bit guilty. After a week, about a week after her passing, I had a dream that was far more clear than any other I'd ever experienced. In the dream, I was looking down and could see both my parents at home and my grandmother in the hospital, sort of like it was a split screen. My parents called me on the phone from my grandmother's bedside to let me speak to her. I asked them if she could hear, and they replied yes. Then, without any words being spoken, I said all the things I wish I had said prior to her death. It was odd because it's as if we were communicating telepathically. When I woke up from my dream, I had this overwhelming sense of peace and happiness. A month went by, and I was waiting for a sign for her presence around me. So I asked for my grandmother to show me a specific sign in the form of making my tower fan oscillate. Probably a bizarre sign to ask for, I know. The next day, I woke up in the middle of the night, and as I'm about to turn over and go back to sleep, the tower fan begins to oscillate. Mind you, this fan has never done this before, and there's no way I could accidentally press the button, seeing as it's across the room. So I'm laying there staring at the fan, and I felt something right next to my feet at the bottom of the bed. I felt the mattress indent as if someone was sitting down, and what felt like a hand on top of my feet. After about a minute, the feeling of the mattress indent and hand went away. I was left with the feeling that it was 100% my grandmother. Well, thanks for reading my reply or my story. I hope to send you guys more in the future. And that comes from Kylie. Kylie, thank you very much for sharing your tale with us. We appreciate that. Let me see here, Tim. We've got a lot of stories buzzing in. Dave, the other night I sent you a text about shadow people, and you read my text on air word for word. Boy, was I surprised. I told you I believe in the paranormal because I've had a few experiences. The first time, I was 5 years old. Years later, I spoke to my oldest brother of that incident and described the ghost. And he said, I saw our mother. She had passed away when I was just 3 years old. I'm 61 years old now. But when I was 11 or 12 years old, me and three others spoke to Jesus Christ. I was the only one that questioned him, and he proved to us who he was. Then in high school, I was a member of my ROTC drill team, and one early morning, we all saw a UFO. From spirits, UFO, and Jesus, I don't care if people believe me or not, I have witnessed and felt comfortable enough to text you about that. My name is Orlando. All right, Orlando, thanks for sharing. That's really cool. Boy, what would you do, Tim, if you were somewhere and Jesus made himself known to you?
That'd be pretty awesome. I would.
Wouldn't you feel overwhelmed by that?
Maybe slightly at first, but I'd have 1,000 questions for him. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be great. But again, then what do? You question Christ? All right, Messiah. See, where were you on 9/11? See, well,
not flippant. I mean, reverent.
No, I know, not like that. Yeah. I just feel weird.
No, I wouldn't. This isn't meant to seem stuck up or anything like that, but it's all the media training. I think when you've been in the business for so long, you get so used to sitting down with even people that you've admired or people that you've, you know, looked up to, that I think that the initial shock wears off so quick when you sit down with somebody that you've admired for so long that you just go into automatic mode and you start asking questions. So I think you learn how to handle your shock and awe for a while, and you just roll into it. So I think
maybe if you're meeting a pro wrestler. I don't know if it's the same reaction when you meet Jesus the Christ, Tim.
I think it would be. I think it would be. I just know how
look how disaffected you are by people. Well, I would be still in shock and awe.
I'm not.
They're all like, whatever, Jesus. By the way, do you have any fishes and loaves? I'm a little hungry.
I wouldn't be asking for that, no.
McRibs?
Could you at least
ask for McRibs?
I would ask for McRibs. I'm not a big fan of fish. No.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Dear Dave. Sorry, Tim.
That's all right.
No mention on this one. I used to work security at a hospital in South Carolina. We used to have to pick up bodies from the floors and bring them to the morgue in the basement. We also had to retrieve bodies from the morgue and bring them up to the service elevator out the exit on the first floor, where a limo and an attendant awaited. Well, myself and another guard put Mr. McCabe, enclosed in a body bag, on the gurney and rolled him outside. The gurney is designed to collapse in the front when it comes into contact with the limo. The other guard was in the back of the gurney with the attendant. I was in the front. Well, they pushed, and the gurney didn't make contact with the limo. Mr. McCabe fell on me. I did everything I could to do to not let him hit the ground. Finally, the other two people helped me lift him back on the gurney. He was over 200 pounds, and I was a slight 138. Now, fast forward. I was so tired, I went back down to the basement next to the morgue. I bought something from the vending machine and then went to the ladies' room, which was next to the men's room. Nobody was on that floor besides myself and a housekeeper, when all of a sudden, while in the ladies' room, I heard a man's voice saying, "Help me," over and over. "Help me, Barb. Get me out of here." Immediately, I thought a man was stuck in the men's room. I knocked and knocked and then flung open the door. Nobody was there. I went to find the housekeeper and asked her if she had seen a patient or employee running around anywhere. She got the most horrid look on her face, saying, "Nobody's down here. Only me. Must have been a ghost. Must have been that man you picked up from the morgue. He probably wasn't ready to go. He wanted you to help him." Long story short, I resigned the next day. No explanation. And that comes from Barb. Yeah, that would be weird. But wouldn't you, maybe if you're right next to the morgue, wouldn't you have gone in and checked the trays to make sure somebody didn't wake up?
Yeah, I would. That would be my first move, yeah. Yeah.
All right. I've been retired for 6 years. This doesn't even say Dave or Tim, so don't feel bad, Tim. It just goes straight into a story here.
Oh, I don't feel bad at all.
Okay. No. Although he does say I do sound a lot like Nori.
Huh.
So, I don't know.
He does, or you do?
No, I do. He references in the first line. He says, "You sound like Nori on air quite a lot." Huh. I'm sure you've heard that before.
Huh.
Do I sound like George Nori to you?
No.
I didn't think so, but I have a lot of people tell me that.
Really?
Yeah. I've been retired for 6 years, but I will forevermore be a Christian after my absolutely horrid episodes while working night shifts on the dying ward and then later in palliative care in Canada. While on my sleep breaks, I got attacked by something evil. It was so much like what I'd heard about, what some want to label as the old hag, but to me, it was something demonic, because it happened to me here at my home. I'm frozen. Until I start singing in my frozen state a hymn, even something as simple as "Jesus Loves Me," then I find myself unfrozen. This has happened to me at least 5 times in my own house, because perhaps the evil did not like the fact that I was going to church almost every Sunday and loved the Lord. Well, on this one night on the palliative ward, I was in quite a deep sleep, unusual as anything, because I always slept with one ear and one eye wide open, and this awful buzzing sound started in my ears. It was awful. I had what felt like something grabbing me with sharp nails. My upper left chest on the surface of my skin and deep inside, it made me want to wake up because it was so awful. I'd try so hard to open my eyes, and then got put back into a very deep sleep, which is very unusual for me. But I, being a fighter, felt strongly compelled to fight this awful, awful thing. I kept looking toward the little nightlight with my eyes open a little. And while doing that, this nasty buzzing sound would stop. And when I put back into a comatose state again, it would begin. It was that nasty buzzing noise over and over. And when I'd open my eyes, it stopped. I eventually stopped as my eyes stayed open. I went out back and onto the ward earlier than the end of my sleep break and told my coworker, a soft-spoken Filipino nurse, and she stretched out her arms to show me that the hair was standing on end, because she said the same thing has happened to her in that room, and she refused to go into that room on her night breaks. Turns out she's Christian, too. The non-believers I know had worked there for years, never getting bothered. Seemed it was only us nurses who knew the Lord. I had other nasty, very, very nasty things occur over the years, over 30 years. But that one incident on palliative convinced me, like no other in my entire life, that I will never stop being a Christian. And that comes from Sharon. Thank you for sharing that, Sharon. Yeah, that would feel weird if you feel like you're being singled out and attacked because of your religious beliefs.
Oh, yeah.
But at least you've got that strength to and fortitude to feel like you've got some control in that deal. Hey, Dave, my name is my name. Oh, hi. Hey, Dave, his name is my name, too. LOL. Anyway, I haven't had any hospital experiences, but I have had a shut down historical prison experience. And I've also seen what I believe to be a manifestation. I know it sounds crazy as hell. The thing popped out of the dirt with a dusty amber like appearance, took the shape of a man, like a tall African-American, to be exact, in clam digger shorts, lighter sepia lining looking shirt, stepped right out in the road, turned its head and looked right at me before the front right side of the vehicle struck it and it dissipated in the night air. And that took place in North Carolina, approximately 2004. Thank you very much for sharing that, Fred. I don't really understand the whole Dave, his name is my name too reference, but who am I to question?
From the song, his name is my name too, meaning his name is Dave too, I guess.
No, but his name was Fred.
Maybe it's his middle name.
Frederick
David.
But if you said, hey, my name is your name too, and then you sign it Fred, that's not Dave. That's confusing as all.
Maybe
hell.
His middle
but
name, you know, is Fred.
All right, here's a story called The Phantom Jogger, Tim.
Ooh,
I don't want to be a jogger in life or as a phantom. Cops are supposed to be hard-headed, fact-seeking folks who are seldom, if ever, given to flights of imagination. With that said, I will be the first to admit that on occasion my imagination has been known to wander a bit. Strange sounds and things that go bump in the night will definitely get my attention and make my eyes grow big, even if only for just a moment. While burglars, drunk drivers, and bar fighters can usually be assessed and dealt with using earthly means, there are other things which I've encountered over the years that, shall we say, fall into different categories. Any cop who has worked through the years of graveyard shifts will inevitably acquire a personal library of such happenings. Along the same lines, no cop in his right mind would go around telling those stories to just anyone. Perhaps a midnight chat with another officer or stories told as fiction to young children and others around the campfire, but never told in such a way as to question the storyteller's veracity or sanity. I worked in a small town, and word about this or that often gets out and can spread like wildfire. I could just imagine myself in court for one thing or another, and then taking the oath to tell the truth before seating myself on the witness stand. Questions from the defense attorney, who would probably be someone I knew, would start off with something like this. Sergeant, isn't it true that you've worked in one capacity or another for the police department for quite some time? Yes, sir. And isn't it also true that you're under oath and you have sworn to tell the truth here in court today? Yes, sir. Wouldn't it be fair to say that you are a rational person who does his best to observe what goes on around him and to later accurately testify about those observations in court if it should become necessary? Yes, sir. The attorney would then briefly pause before addressing the court. Your Honor, I'm sure that the court agrees that credibility is a very important part of any testimony which will be heard here today. The judge, whom I would also know, would nod his head sagely. With that thought in mind, I would like to ask the court to bear with me while I ask the good sergeant several questions about his experiences as a police officer. I feel that this will be very helpful in establishing a basis for his credibility. You may proceed, counselor, the judge would intone. Now the attorney would spin towards me with a wolfish grin and on his face and ask, Sergeant, have you ever heard of a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater? Why, yes, I have, I would have to say. And isn't it also true that you claim to have actually seen a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater while out on patrol for the police department 3 years ago last June? The court would then erupt in laughter as the defense attorney rested his case in regards to my credibility. No, if cops had seen unusual or weird things, they don't talk about them unless someone else sees it, too. Now, it was about 11:15 for most folks to understand on Halloween night back in 1973. I had just finished working a bee watch, which runs from 3 in the afternoon until 11 at night. My car was parked out in the lot, and I needed to get some gear out before going home. As I walked outside, I saw Ed, who had also been emptying his car out, standing very still and staring off toward the south side of the lot. Look there, he said, pointing. Looking off towards where he was pointing, I saw a fellow all dressed in a hooded white jogging outfit eastbound on Washington Street. The guy first came into view from in front of the fire station number 1 and was running toward an old white office building which occupied the southeast lot off the intersection of South Broadway and East Washington Street. It was kind of unusual for anyone to be out jogging that time of night, even on Halloween, and so the guy immediately had my undivided attention. I saw that he was wearing a full white sweatsuit with a hood that completely hid his head from view from side to side, which was where I was standing. In addition, I remember specifically listening for and not hearing his feet hitting the ground. He was moving in total silence. He was actually in our front view for about a block before crossing South Broadway to the southeast corner. He then ran to the west side of the old office building and into a clump of lilac bushes, which were situated next to the wall. It was perfect setup for us. The guy had nowhere to go unless he were to reemerge from behind the bushes and run along about 50 feet of open wall in either direction. I backed over to my patrol car, never once taking my eyes off the lilac bushes, and threw my spotlight on the bush. Ed got into his car and drove around the north side of the building and behind it, and then back around the other side. As I pulled straight forward towards it, we both simultaneously converged on the same spot at the same time from two different directions. We were confident that we had this weirdo cornered, whoever he was. With headlights on high beam and spotlights flooding the area with brightness, we approached the clump of lilac, only to find no one there. The wall immediately behind the bushes was lined with glass bricks, and there was no windows or doors. The guy could not have even been able to have escaped by going straight up without having our having seen him. He was gone. Because there had been two of us, we told the story as a fact to our fellow officers. Several years later, two other officers claimed to have seen, chased, and lost the apparition in the same area with him disappearing against the same building. I wasn't there for that one, and while I am familiar with the story, will not repeat it here. But whatever it may be worth, the building was that the phantom jogger runs to and disappears at was one time a hospital. By the way, a footnote, exactly 25 years later to the day, hour, and minute, I was again out on patrol, as we usually like to have extra officers on the street for Halloween. When the appointed time came, I parked my patrol car about a half block to the north of the building and intersection in question. It seemed logical, if such a term can be applied to anything like this, that if I was ever going to get another look at the Phantom Jogger, this would be my best chance to do so. Blacking out my lights, I rolled down my window, shut off the engine, and waited, but nothing happened. And that came from Bart Ringer in Wyoming. Thank you very much. He's a retired law enforcement officer with 37 years experience. Well, Bart, if you have more stories, I would love to hear your stories as a police officer, some of the other weird paranormal encounters you've had through the years. That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we love getting those real life stories. I think we've got a quick story here. We'll do this one and then we'll have to wrap it up. Hi, Dave. This is a short and funny story for you. I was watching a show about cryptids. My husband was in the room with me and was sort of paying attention. The show ended and we headed up to bed. While we were both lying in bed and watching the news, we heard a strange noise from outside. My husband looks over at me with a fake scared look on his face and says, "Are you scared? I hope it's not a Cuba Libre." And that is how the conversation went down. Me, a what? Hubby, a Cuba Libre. Me, confused. I asked, "How would a rum and coke with lime make that kind of noise?" "No, you know, one of those crazy monsters from the TV show you like." "Honey, a Cuba Libre is a drink." "No, it's not. I'm going to Google it." He reaches for his phone. Time passes silently while I hold in my laughter. "Hubby, damn, all that's coming up on Google is rum and coke." More silence. "I'll bet, because I think what you meant to say is chupacabra." Smiling at me, he says, "Well, I'll bet if there was another very dangerous mythical beast out there, they would name it the Cuba Libre. You gotta love them. So, love listening to you and Tim and your guests. Keep up the great work. Say hi to Tim. Stay warm." And that's from Sarah in Macomb, Michigan. Thank you very much, Sarah in Macomb, Michigan. We like ending on a fun note. That's it for today. We will be back tomorrow. Tim, we've got an interesting guest lined up for tomorrow. We're going to be talking about someone's paranormal experiences. They've never written a book or appeared on TV, but it is somebody who has reached out to us through social media and is looking for help, looking for answers, and wants to share her story for the first time with us. That's tomorrow on the best in paranormal talk radio. That's Tim, I'm Dave, and this is Beyond the Darkness.